This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
I want you to go through the whole Quran with me. Join me at bayina.tv.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. إذ قالت امرأة عمران رب إني نذرت لك ما في بطني محررا فتقبل مني إنك أنت السميع العليم فلما وضعتها قالت رب إني وضعتها أنثى والله أعلم بما وضعت وليس الذكر كالأنثى وإني سميتها مريم وإني أعيذها بك وذريتها من الشيطان الرجيم فتقبلها ربها بقبول حسن وأنبتها نباتا حسنا وكفلها زكريا كلما دخل عليها زكريا المحراب وجد عندها رزقا قال يا مريم أنى لك هذا قالت هو من عند الله إن الله يرزق من يشاء بغير حساب رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي امري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي فالحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى اله وصحبه اجمعين ثم اما بعد. Once again, assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh. There are a few things that I wanted to share about the parallels in this story and the story of Isa alayhi salam before we continue, and also some commentary from our mufassirun on the history of the mother of Maryam salamun alayha that has been mentioned as Imra'at Imran in these ayat. The first thing that I wanted to mention, that Allah chose the family of Imran, in this family you have two individual roles that are very important. In the original case, it's the mother of Musa alayhi salam, and the father of Musa, his name is Imran, as I keep mentioning. And in that story, there's a baby involved. And in this story, there's also a baby involved. Maryam is going to have a baby. In that story in particular, Allah Azza wa Jalla saved that baby by means of his sister, whose name is Miriam. And in this story, it's his mother, Maryam, who is going to come and actually stand by the baby and defend the baby and face the society. That child received the Torah, and then this child, Isa alayhi salam, is going to be receiving Torah and Injil. Actually, وَيُعَلِّمُهُ الْكِتَابَ وَالْحِكْمَةَ وَالتَّوْرَاةَ وَالْإِنْجِيلَ. So it's actually the family of Imran paralleled not only in that sense, but also in the sense that at the end of this journey of Banu Israel, it's almost the same events repeating themselves. A child is involved, revelation is involved, a miraculous saving is involved, danger is involved for the mother, characters named Maryam are involved. So those are some interesting parallels between those two sides. Ibn Ashur actually even argues that perhaps Maryam, the mother of Isa, was named after Miriam, like inspired by the name Miriam of the sister of Harun. So there's those parallels between the two stories as well. The other interesting thing about this ayah, where she says, she's going to actually make dua and say, I seek refuge of Allah for my child. I ask Allah to protect my child when Maryam, when Maryam was born. She said, for Maryam and her offspring. So she says, "Inni u'iduha bika wa dhurriyataha." We're going to see those ayat. The word dhurriya is a repetition of what we just read, dhurriyatan ba'duha min ba'd. Allah chose Adam, and Nuh, and the family of Ibrahim, and the family of Imran, and they're all offspring of each other. Dhurriya was used. And now the word dhurriya is being used by the mother. Now, interestingly, the word dhurriya in Quran, and generally in Semitic literature, is not used for mothers. It's used for fathers. And it comes in the context of fathers having children. And also naming children is something that fathers do, traditionally. And in this story, you've got the term dhurriya, her offspring, her lineage, being discussed by the mother. And as a matter of fact, the child is also being named by the mother. She's being named by the mother. And so, in doing so, there's a subtle lesson being taught to us about what it means to have a lineage. There's a lineage of family name, descendants, genealogy, and all of that. That's attributed to the father. We take the last names of our fathers. And so on and so on and so forth. Even the Israelites, from where she belongs, they're called Banu Israel because their father's name is Israel, right? So the father is where the identity comes from. But spiritual lineage is different from the paternal lineage. Spiritual lineage is something else. In spiritual lineage, the man and the woman, there's no difference. So even though the child is not going to take her name, but she's still part of the dhurriya that Allah describes as Al Ibrahim and Al Imran. Right? So that's a really powerful distinction Allah has made between how we think of lineage in the worldly sense and how there's actually such a thing as a lineage in the spiritual sense that goes beyond last names. That has nothing to do with, you know, the family names that we take. So now, having said that, I want to share with you just some things that have been said about the mother of Maryam. From our traditions, I read to you and shared with you some of the stories about her and her husband from the biblical account and from the Christian text account, even if it's not biblical, if it's extra-biblical, like the infancy gospel that I read from yesterday. This comes from Imam Razi, and he's attributing this to Muhammad ibn Ishaq. Inna umma Maryama kana ma kana yahsulu laha walad hatta shakhat. The mother of Maryam could not have a child until she became very old. وَكَانَتْ يَوْمًا فِي ظِلِّ شَجَرَةٍ فَرَأَتْ طَائِرًا يَطْعَمُ فَرَخًا لَهُ فَتَحَرَّكَتْ نَفْسَهَا لِلْوَلَدِ. She says that one day she was just sitting in the garden and she saw a bird fly around and it emotionally moved her and prayed for a child. Like even these birds can have children, offspring, they have a nest and they have eggs, and I can't have one, Ya Allah, give me a child like you've given these birds. What I didn't read to you from the Gospel of James, the infancy gospel, is actually this exact story. She was in a garden, saw birds, and started lamenting to God. So, and this is found in Ibn Ishaq, Muhammad ibn Ishaq's literature. So you could see how our scholars were not unfamiliar with biblical literature. Like they were in contact with this stuff. And a lot of that made it into our tafsir. We may not know where it came from, but when you do outside studies, you see, there's parallels between what they're saying and what these other sources are saying. It's really interesting. Well, so then the other piece of this, فَدَعَتْ رَبَّهَا أَنْ يَهَبَ لَهَا وَلَدًا فَحَمَلَتْ بِمَرْيَمْ. So she made dua to Allah that Allah grant her a child, and she became pregnant with Maryam. وَهَلَكَ عِمْرَانَ. Imran died. Her husband died. فَلَمَّا عَرَفَتْ جَعَلَتْهُ لِلَّهِ مُحَرَّرًا. And when she found out that her husband has died, this is also interestingly kind of alluded to in the story that he died, that she had a child, and by that time he had already died. Okay. That she decided to dedicate this child to Allah exclusively. أي خادماً للمسجد, to be a servant of the masjid. Because that's what her husband wanted. Her husband was constantly giving and serving, and now that he's died, she wants his legacy to be carried on by the child, and that's why she dedicated him in this way. Or the supposed boy that she was going to have. قال الحسن البصري إنها إنما فعلت ذلك بإلهام من الله ولي وَلَوْ لَهُ مَا فَعَلَتْ كَمَا رَآ إِبْرَاهِيمُ ذِبْحَ إِبْنِهِ فِي الْمَنَامِ فَعَلِمَ أَنَّ ذَلِكَ أَمْرٌ مِّنَ اللَّهِ وَإِنْ لَمْ يَكُنْ عَنْ وَحِي كَمَا أَلْهَمَ اللَّهُ مُوسَى فَقَذَفَتْهُ فِي الْيَمِّ وَلَيْسَ بِوَحِي. She's basically saying Allah put something in her heart to want to dedicate the child. It's not just an idea she had to carry on the legacy of her husband, but she actually wanted to dedicate the child because Allah inspired her to do that. It was a form of revelation. And then, you know, Imam Razi makes a distinction between different kinds of revelation. Revelation that comes to prophets and revelation that comes to other than prophets, called ilham, inspiration, a kind of indirect inspiration. And he compares that inspiration to what happened with the mother of Musa, who was inspired to put her baby in a basket by Allah. Right? So that wasn't an idea she came up with. Allah Azza wa Jal basically told her to do that. Okay? And so the same way she has this inclination in her heart, Allah is telling her to put this child in the dedication of Allah's service. The other interesting thing, a benefit of As-Sami' al-Alim, I didn't mention yesterday, you know, we saw ذُرِّيَّةً بَعْضُهَا مِنْ بَعْضُ وَاللَّهُ سَمِيعٌ عَلِيمٌ. And then in this ayah that we read yesterday, فَتَقَبَّلْ مِنِّي إِنَّكَ أَنْتَ السَّمِيعُ الْعَلِيمُ. Except from me, you are the one who is As-Sami' al-Alim. So both the ayahs number 34 and 35 end with the same names of Allah, the hearing, the knowing. And they're in context of dua and of having offspring. So the thing that I wanted, that I didn't highlight before, what I did briefly mention is when Allah talks about prayers for offsprings, As-Sami' al-Alim comes up. That's what I did mention. What I didn't mention is As-Sami' makes sense. Innaka Sami'u dua, Inna Rabbi la Sami'u dua. My master hears the prayer. My master hears the call. What's Alim doing there? Alim is actually a balancing of our thoughts about dua. Of course, when we make dua, we pray that Allah listens to our prayer. Allah listens to our worship. So dua, you're calling. The purpose of, literally in language, when you call someone, what's the point of calling if the person can't hear you? So the word sami' literally has to do with the call, right? So there's a connection there that's logical and obvious. But alim isn't obvious. Alim is not obvious. And so alim is adding a new dimension to the idea. Allah doesn't just hear the prayer. You know how when somebody's in a bad state and you say, make dua, Allah listens. Right? Allah listens. Allah listens, everybody needs to hear. But what's this Allah knows that's in addition to Allah listens? You see, the words we say and the requests we make are coming from our tongue. But even though we're saying some things with our tongue, the state of our heart is not known. Right? So Allah, when He says He's as-sami' al-alim, in reference to dua, He's actually listening to our words, but also knowledgeable of our hearts. It's also knowledgeable of our secrets and our actions, because, you know, some people can be doing some terrible haram things and then making dua. And nobody knows about the terrible haram things they're doing, but they're making, Allah knows that you're making this dua, but with what character? Like, what are you behaving like? Allah knows, and yet you're making dua. So when we call on Allah and we call Him As-Sami'ul Alim, then we're actually acknowledging to Allah, Ya Allah, I'm asking, and knowing full well that You know what state I'm in. And after recognizing that you know everything that I do, I need to be in a position where I can actually be asking You. I need to be in a position of service to You, humility to You, tawbah to You. And that's a state of my heart. And only in that case am I really in a true position to be making dua to You. So As-Sami'u al-Alim are important pairings like that, because they are an act of confession to Allah. The request from Allah is in As-Sami'u, and the confession to Allah is in Al-Alim. And both of those go hand in hand when we make dua to Allah. May Allah make us aware of that when we make dua to Him. Anyway, so فَلَمَّا وَضَعَتْهَا, and when she finally gave birth. And you know, finally, لَمَّا is actually a long duration of time. This is, of course, because first of all, she became very old until she could give birth. So لَمَّا is not just, you know, إِذْ means when. لَمَّا is finally when. Then finally when. And suggests so many years went by and she's an old lady. And of course, then she was pregnant finally and her husband was happy. But her husband didn't even get to see the birth of the child. So this also made the pregnancy feel extra long. And eventually when that pregnancy came to an end, and all this time she's anticipating that this child, that's this boy that I'm going to dedicate to Allah's service, is going to, you know, to carry that name, and she's happy that she gets to do that for her child. It's a I don't know if I put this excerpt here, but you know, in their culture, we don't have that in Islam. In our Sharia, it's not actually a dominant part of the culture. But in Banu Israel, there were some practices that were very common that are not very common in Islam. Okay, so in the final Sharia given to Rasulullah ﷺ, but in Banu Israel, they were much more common. And one of the more common things was, you know, in our deen, it's da'wah, right? And when it need be, it was jihad fi sabilillah. These were the things that we dedicated our sons and daughters to teaching or to spreading the message of Islam, etc. Banu Israel were not a nation of da'wah. They were not going out and preaching the message to other nations. They were actually not told to do that. We're the ummah that's told to spread the deen, right? بَلِّغُوا عَنِّي وَلَوْ آيَةً. Spread the religion even if it's one ayah. Banu Israel was not like that. They were supposed to just preserve Islam for themselves. That's what Allah's command to them was. So Rasul would come specifically to Bani Israel for Bani Israel. So then if somebody wants to serve deen, like, you know, in our day and age, when somebody says, I want to serve deen, they're thinking about da'wah to Muslims, da'wah to non-Muslims, right? But in their case, da'wah meant, or dedicating yourself to service meant that I'm going to take my child, who usually when they grow up, they serve the family, they take care of the farm, they take care of the animals, they take care of the business, etc., etc. They become the father's backbone. I'm going to take that most valued treasure, the child, and I'm going to dedicate that to Allah. Okay? And so especially this was done with sons, because sons were considered the biggest asset and commodity. Sons grow up and stay in the family. They carry the family name forward. They provide all of that service. So this was their tradition of showing dedication and service to Allah. Is the biggest sadaqah I can give is my own child. And they would do that in early childhood. Some actually even say that all the prophets of Bani Israel were dedicated like this early on. And when they reach mature age, when they become teenagers, then they're given the khiyar. They're given the option. Do you want to stay in service? And do you want to stay committed to religious service? Or do you want to live a different kind of life now? Do you want to just go join regular life again? And they have to make that choice at that time. Whichever choice they make, they commit to. In other words, if they decide they're going to stay in service to the temple, the masjid of the time, and teaching the Torah and learning the Torah and all of that, then that's what they do until they die. That's all they're going to do. And if they decide that they're going to come back and serve, you know, and you know, go to the farm or become a trader and all of that, then that's what they're going to do. But that's a life choice. But early on, some of the children were dedicated from childhood on to be groomed for that purpose from the very, very beginning. And this was a tradition that they had. So it's in keeping with that tradition that she made that pledge to Allah. So when she finally gave birth, فَلَمَّا وَضَعَتْ Allah says, فَلَمَّا وَضَعَتْ هَا Notice the words هَا. And this is Allah talking now. So when finally she gave her birth, and the word her referring to Maryam, and notice the in the previous ayah you saw the word muharraran. Muharraran is the masculine word, isn't it? So she says, إِنِّي نَذَرْتُ لَكَ مَا فِي بَطْنِي مُحَرَّرًا Because she's expecting a male. So the male word is used, a child that's a boy that's been freed up from all service. But when she gave her birth, when she delivered her, قَالَتْ She then said, Rabbi, my master, my God, إِنِّي وَضَعْتُهَا أُنْثَى I have given her birth, a girl. I'm literally translating, oh my goodness, I've given birth. Seriously, I've given birth to her? A girl? I got the seriously from inna. I said I twice because inni and then wada'atu. And then her is ha. And then untha, a girl. Her shock is captured in inni, wada'atuha, untha. And she's talking to Allah. Now, it's interesting that she's talking to Allah like that. Imam Razi even says, فَذَكَرَ ذَلِكَ لَا عَلَى سَبِيلِ الْإِعْلَامِ لِلَّهِ تَعَالَى She didn't say that because she was telling Allah. By the way, Allah, it's a girl. Because she says, Master, I give birth to a girl. I just wanted you to know. Like, that's not what she's doing. تَعَالَ اللَّهُ عَنْ أَنْ يَحْتَاجِ إِلَىٰ إِعْلَامِهَا Allah is too superior to need her to inform him. بَلْ ذَكَرَتْ ذَلِكَ عَلَى سَبِيلِ الْإِعْتِذَارِ One possible interpretation of this is that she said this in this way to basically apologize to Allah. Ya Allah, I know I made promises and pledges to dedicate my child to the service of the masjid, but it's a girl. It's her, a girl. So she's kind of saying, this is her humble way of backing out of the pledge that she made so passionately in the previous ayah, right? So that's one way that this has been read, that her reluctance is captured. And her shock is captured, and in thus, it's an apology to Allah that I can't dedicate this child, obviously, because it's not going to work, because it's a girl. The other interesting interpretation of this is that instead of, you know, and there are gradations of emotion. The first emotion is shock. And then after that, there's actually even a kind of acceptance. Like, Master, I've given birth to a girl. As if, Ya Allah, you knew what I was going to give birth to. And you decided that this should be a girl. And I'm honored. Like, instead of thinking of it as something less, she thinks of it as something more, something great that's just happened. And so both dimensions of it, and perhaps it's not one or the other, it's perhaps one then the other. You know, sometimes you first hear the news, you're like, ah, oh. And then you're like, there's some good in it. Allah has some good in it. And your thoughts about it evolve. And that evolution is captured within one sentence in the ayah. So she says, you know, inni wada'tuha untha. And then Allah adds, wallahu a'lamu bima wada'at. And Allah knows better what she gave birth to. What she delivered, Wallahu a'lamu bima wada'at. Now what's that sentence doing there? One implication of Wallahu a'lamu bima wada'at is ta'zeeman li waladiha. This is to inspire and to aggrandize, to make a big deal out of the child that she's given birth to. Allah knows what an incredible birth she's given. It's as if Allah is saying what an amazing child she's had. And Allah knows better how amazing that child is. وَتَجْهِيلًا لَهَا بِقَدْرِ ذَلِكَ الْوَلَدِ And Allah is also declaring, I knew better about that child than you did. And when Allah inspired you to pray for a dedication, Allah already knew it's a girl. And you had no idea, but Allah says, I knew better than you that I did. And I inspired you anyway. I motivated you to make that prayer anyway. وَمَعْنَاهُ وَاللَّهُ أَعْلَمُ بِالشَّيْءَ الَّذِي وَضَعَتْ وَبِمَا عَلِقَ بِهِ مِنْ عَظَائِمِ الْأُمُورِ And it is also said that Allah knows better what she gave birth to and how this baby is going to be related to such great things in Islam. And what great status she's going to have, what an incredible role she's going to play. None of that is known to the mother, that's only known to Allah. وَأَنْ يَجْعَلَهُ وَوَلَدَهُ آيَةً لِلْعَالَمِينَ And that Allah will make that newborn and the child that newborn will eventually have a miracle for nations to come, for all nations to come. وَهِيَ جَاهِلَةٌ بِذَلِكَ لَا تَعْلَمُ مِنْهُ شَيْئًا فَلِذَلِكَ تَحَسَّرَتْ. And she has no clue that that's the case. The mom has no idea that this is the great plan of Allah, that this woman is going to become a role model and an honor for believing women until the Day of Judgment. And her son is going to be given this miraculous honor, her grandchild, Isa alayhi salam. She has no idea that all of that's going to happen. Therefore, she's in shock or she's regretting. Why did I make this pledge in haste? وَقِرَاتُ ابْنِ عَبَاسٍ. There are other readings of the same ayah. وَاللَّهُ أَعْلَمُ بِمَا وَضَعَتْ. There's another qira'ah of this ayah. وَاللَّهُ أَعْلَمُ بِمَا وَضَعْتُ. وَاللَّهُ أَعْلَمُ بِمَا وَضَعْتُ. If you read it that way, then what does وَضَعْتُ mean? I delivered. Meaning, she says to Allah, Ya Allah, it's a girl. Allah knows better what I delivered. I'm not saying I'm informing you, Ya Allah. I know you know better that I delivered a girl. So she's humbling herself immediately after she just spoke in a kind of way. You know, for Arabic students, there are two kinds of sentences in rhetoric. There's khabar and insha, right? And khabar is when you inform, and insha is when you're speaking out of emotion. When you use inna, usually, then it actually suggests khabar, meaning you're informing someone. That's when inna is used. And when you remove inna, then it's typically insha. Now, she used inna out of shock. But she used the usloob of this, the style of khabar, even though she meant insha. Now, insha means you're speaking out of emotion. So, for example, just to make this easy for everybody else, if I say to you, what a great day. What nice weather, even though we don't have nice weather. But, you know, or it's hot today. If I just told somebody, or the weatherman said on the news, it is hot today, right? Then he's informing me that it's hot today. But if I stood outside and nobody's around, I said, it's hot today. Same sentence. But am I informing anyone? No, I'm actually expressing my emotion. Right? So sentences, the same sentence could be for informing purposes. The same sentence could be for expressing your own feelings. Now, when she said, I've given birth to a girl. Oh my God, it's a girl that I gave birth to. She's not informing. She's only expressing her emotion. But the style of sentence, yeah, my master, I've given birth to a girl, can also be misinterpreted as her informing Allah. So one reading of the ayah is, وَاللَّهُ أَعْلَمُ بِمَا وَضَعْتُ. And Allah knows better what I gave birth to, meaning I'm not informing you, Ya Rab, you know better. And she's kind of backtracking from what it could be misconstrued as. And so that's the other interpretation of it. There's a weaker narration that doesn't make it to the Qira'at al-Sab'r, the seven, you know, readings that are authenticated. Imam Razi attributes it to Ibn Abbas. I can't figure out, you know, where he's getting it from, but it's there. It's mentioned that it's also been read by some. Wallahu a'lamu bima wada'ti. Wallahu a'lamu bima wada'ti. And that interpretation would be Allah talked to her and said, Allah knows better what you gave birth to, woman. Because basically, he's telling, Allah is not talking to her and saying, yeah, you just said you had a girl. Allah knows better what you had. Okay. So it's directly talking to her. But the more common reading, and the most common reading, is what we read mostly in the Mus'haf, which is وَاللَّهُ أَعْلَمُ بِمَا وَضَعَتْ. That's the most common way of looking at it. So Allah knows better what she gave birth to, and Allah Azza wa Jalla, when He says that, there's another switch. And that's وَلَيْسَ الذَّكَرُ كَالْأُنْثَى. Another complication in this ayah. وَلَيْسَ الذَّكَرُ كَالْأُنْثَى. The common translation of this ayah is, boys are not like girls. The male is not like the female. And then people write a thesis on the male is not like the female. Here is how boys are, you know, better or whatever. You know, boys are not like girls. And the problem with that is when we take a statement from the Quran that is part of an ayah, within an ayah, and within that ayah is playing a particular role, and then we pretend that it's not playing a particular role, it's actually a universal truth for all humanity to bear. You know, if she's speaking, and what's her context? She wanted to dedicate this child to the service of the masjid. And in that service, who's suitable? Boys or girls, typically? Boys. And in that context, she says, a boy is not like a girl. The male can do what the female can't in this role. We take that and turn this into a thesis, a book about how boys are not, and by the way, boys are not like girls is not some deep wisdom that you could not have known unless the Quran revealed it. Like, wait, what, boys are not like girls? hold on, let me write that down. Like, you know, you wouldn't do that. So when something so apparently obvious is said, it's obviously alluding to something that's not so literal. It's alluding to something else. It's talking about something else. So I'll share with you just some of the things that have been said about this. But I'll go to Imam Razi first, who says, why does she say that the boy would have been better in this case? A boy can do what my pledge, not better, but a boy could have done what my pledge suggested. How can a girl do that? That's one possible meaning of the boy, the male is not like the female. وَسَبَبُ هَذَا التَّفْضِيلِ مِنْ وُجُوهِ أَحَدُهَا أَنَّ شَرْعَهُمْ أَنَّهُ لَا يَجُوزْ تَحْرِيرُ الذُّكُورِ دُونَ الْإِنَاثِ. That their law, their current tradition, their religious tradition didn't allow for girls to be dedicated to the service of the masjid, only boys. So that's one reason. وَالثَّانِي أَنَّ الذَّكَرْ يَصُحُ أَنْ يَسْتَمِرَّ عَلَى خِدْمَةِ مَوْضِعِ الْعِبَادَةِ وَلَا يَصُحْ ذَلِكَ فِي الْأُنْثَى لِمَكَانِ الْمَحِيضِ وَسَائِرِ عَوَارِدِ النِّسْوَانِ. That women get their menstrual cycle, and in that time they're in a state of impurity and they shouldn't be in the masjid. And boys don't have that issue, so they can remain in the masjid. So that's another reason why this couldn't have happened. والثالث الذكر يصلح لقوته وشدته للخدمة دون الأنثى فإنها ضعيفة لا تقوى على الخدمة. That the boys can be strong and they can do other things like building, repairing the roof, like other, you know, manual labor, and it's not appropriate for girls to be engaged in kind of that kind of labor because it's not, you know, a man is exposed and people are walking from underneath and things like that. So he says, well, you know, boys are, it's more, they're more strong and they're suitable for more manual kinds of work, which wouldn't have been suitable for a girl to do in the temple, in the masjid. والرابع أن الذكر لا يلحقه عيب في الخدمة والاختلاط بالناس وليس كذلك الأنثى. And a man can meet with different people and engage and teach, but in the tradition, if a woman is going and socializing like that openly and teaching, then it would have been looked down upon, and so she didn't have that kind of freedom. والخامس أن الذكر لا يلحقه من التهمة عند الاختلاط ما يلحق الأنثى فهذه الوجوه تقتضي فضل الذكر على الأنثى في هذا المعنى. So in his view, it's because again she can't socialize the way men can. She can't go visit a family and nobody bats an eye. But where are you going? Why are you going here? Why are you going here? A girl will be asked. And you know, in any traditional family in the world, I mean, somebody, we're fairly more modernized, many of us. But you know, if you go to any traditional society, when a girl gets to a certain age, she doesn't just say, she just grabs the keys and walks out of the house and nobody asks where you're going. No, where are you going? Whose house? Who's there? What do you mean, your friend? Who are these friends? How many, does she have a brother? Is he home? How old is he? Right? You don't just let the girl go wherever she goes. There's questions to be asked. But if a boy says, I'm going to my friend's house, you'll say, hey, does he have a sister? How old is she? How many people in the household? What's their social security number? Shoe size? What's their... You don't do that. So with girls, there's a lot more questions. Protectiveness. There's an added layer of protectiveness. And, you know, the people that are going to be doing this kind of service, they're in public service. They have to go out on call and help people and, you know, perform a janazah or help the sick or pray for them and be on all kinds of situations. And some of those situations may not be appropriate for a woman. And so for those reasons, she expressed that al-dhakar, you know, laysa dhakar kal-untha. But another reading of the same is actually أن المقصود من هذا الكلام ترجيح هذه الأنثى على الذكر. Which I prefer this reading actually, in her speech and Allah's speech. This could be Allah saying it and it could be her saying it. I personally lean more towards she said it in one way and Allah said the same thing in another way. So she said it is, how can this girl do what a boy is supposed to do? A boy is not like a girl. That's what she says. But Allah said it, meant this in another way. The boy you thought you were going to have is nowhere near the girl Allah just gave you. The boy, the girl, right? This is not Ismail Jins. You're thinking of as Lam al-Ma'hud, you know, Ma'hud. It's a specific Lam. You had this boy, Dhalika al-Dhakar, in your mind. This boy that you thought was in here. When he came out, it's that girl. And that boy that you had in your mind could never have even come close to this girl. Now to understand that parallel, you know, in rhetoric, When you say A is like B, or A is not like B, A is not like B. I say, for example, a Kia is not like a Ferrari. A Kia is not like a Ferrari. I don't say a Ferrari is not like a Kia. Whichever one is superior is actually mentioned after the is not like. So in the Quran, for example, creation is not like Allah. Creation, it's essentially, لَيْسَ كَمِثْلِهِ شَيْءٍ كَمِثْلِهِ شَيْءٍ. Nothing is like his example. Allah is superior. Whatever came first in these not like sentences is inferior. That's inferior. There's one exception to that, rhetorically. You should know this exception. The exception to this is when you're talking about, you know, A is not like B, when both A and B are the same group. Like, for example, you are not like the rest of the students. If I say that, then I'm kind of saying you're better. Or, you know, he is not like the rest of the teachers. Then you're saying that teacher is the best. But they're all teachers. They're all part of the same group. You understand? So this is how it's used, for example, لَسْتُنَّكَ أَحَدٍ مِنَ النِّسَاءِ. The mothers of the believers are told, you're not like the rest of women. They're women also, but they're in a superior place. But other than that, when you're talking about two separate categories, boys and girls are separate category, Allah and creation, separate category, Kia and Ferrari, separate categories, separate species of car altogether. When you do that, then the first item is inferior and the second item is superior. So when the ayah says, the male, the boy, is not like the girl, it's actually saying, that boy you had in mind is nowhere near like this girl that Allah has given you. She's way superior. She's way better. This is the status of Maryam in the words of Allah, which is exactly identical to her own words. How can this girl, you know, basically the boy would have been fine, but how can this girl do what a boy does? Allah took that same statement and reversed it in its meaning by attributing it to himself. So it's attributed in a sense beautifully both to Allah and to Maryam salamun alayha with two different meanings, while concurrent at the same time. So وَلَيْسَ ذَكَرُكَ الْأُنْثَى وَلَيْسَ ذَكَرَ الَّذِي يَكُونُ مطلوبي. And there's a third implication, and that is that she actually, finally, Allah, just like Allah put in her to pray for a baby, and in her initial reaction, how can this baby be good enough for that cause? But eventually Allah even inspired her to accept what Allah knew, meaning this girl is better. And so Imam Razi talks about this and says, in her mind eventually what happened, كَأَنَّهَا قَالَتْ, as it is as though she finally said, الذَّكَرْ مَطْلُوبِي, it's a boy is what I wanted. وَهَذِهِ الْأُنْثَى, but this is a girl. But this girl is مَوْهُوبَةُ اللَّهِ تَعَالَى. This is a gift from Allah, meaning my desire was a boy, but Allah's gift is a girl. وَلَيْسَ الذَّكَرَ الَّذِي يَكُونُ مَطْلُوبِي كَالْأُنْثَى الَّتِي هِيَ مَوْهُوبَةٌ لِلَّهِ. And how can something that I wanted, a boy, be better than something that's a gift from Allah, a girl? Right? What a beautiful way to think. I wanted a boy, but Allah decided a girl. How can my want be better than the gift of Allah? Everyone who ever has a daughter should think like this. Everyone who ever has a daughter, how can what I want, because some people just want a boy, you know? And as soon as it's not a boy, next time. You know, like, how can what I want be better than what Allah gifted? You know? And so she says, وَهَذَا الْكَلَامِ يَدُلُّ عَلَىٰ أَنَّ تِلْكَ الْمَرْأَىٰ كَانَتْ مُسْتَغْرِقَ فِي مَعْرِفَةِ جَلَالِ اللَّهِ. It is as though this statement of hers is illustrating how this woman was completely immersed in Allah's glory. Like the greatness of Allah was never lost on her. عَالِمَةً بِأَنَّ مَا يَفْعَلُهُ الرَّبِّ الْعَبْدُ خَيْرٌ مِمَّا يُرِيدُهُ الْعَبْدُ لِنَفْسِهِ. Always aware that what Allah does, what the master does with the slave, is always going to be better than what the slave wants for himself. That's what she was aware of when she says, وَلَيْسَ ذَكَرُكَ الْأُنْثَى. وَاللَّهُ أَعْلَمُ بِمَا وَضَعَتْ وَلَيْسَ ذَكَرُكَ الْأُنْثَى. And so, and I've mentioned her husband had died, and typically the tradition was that children were named by the father, but the father had died. So it was her job now to name this child. So Allah Azza wa Jalla actually goes out of his way to mention وَإِنِّي سَمَّيْتُهَا مَرْيَمْ. And it is certainly, it's me now. As you know, and it's إِنِّي سَمَّيْتُ is actually not just for إِزَالَةُ الشَّكْ, but it's actually now only I'm left to do this. Nobody else can do that, because my husband's not there anymore. So I'm, in fact, the one that's going to have to name her, and I'm naming her Maryam. I'm giving her the name Maryam. Inni sammaytuha Maryam. Wasam is the original letters for tasmiya. Samma yusammi tasmiyatan. There's actually, in complex grammar, sometimes what happens is, you have something that started mithal, waw, seen, and meme. But when it moves from one family to another, then the waw moves over to the end. So it became samma yusammi tasmiyatan. So the root letters are not seen, meme, and waw. It's actually waw, seen, and meme. Those are the original meanings, okay? But there's some argue that no, you can go back to seen, meme, and waw also, which is sumuwun. And sumu means elevation. I have elevated her as Maryam. That's one possible shav meaning, but possible. I have elevated her. And by the way, that's where the word sama comes from. High elevation. Okay? So I have elevated her as Maryam, or I have named her Maryam. Okay? And wasam actually means marks or signs or qualities. So I'm dedicating her qualities to be that of a Maryam. So it's actually Maryam is her name, but the word Maryam means certain things that she's hoping become part of her personality. Okay, so that's why she's naming her Maryam. وفيه أبحاث البحث الأول أن الظاهر الكلام يدل على ما حكينا من أن عمران كان قد مات في حال حمل حنة بمريم. حنة was her name. Saint Anne, they call her in Christian tradition. In Tafsir tradition, we call her حنة. Okay, and that her husband had died, which is why she took on this task. فلذلك تولت الأم تسميتها لأن العادة أن ذلك يتولاه الأباء. That the norm was for fathers to do that, but she did that. Okay, now let's talk a little bit about the meanings of the name Maryam, because Allah made it a big deal to actually mention this part of the story. Like a child was born, okay, move on. But no, a child was born and the name is Maryam. So you'll find some names in the Quran, Allah goes out of His way to mention the naming, right? Ismuhu Yahya. Al-Masih Isa ibn Maryam, like going out of the way to mention the naming of someone, then those names become very important and the meanings behind them become important because Allah is actually highlighting those meanings. So the name Maryam has often been misconstrued as, basically taken on a Greek form of the Hebrew name Miriam. So the Hebrew name is actually Miriam, and Miriam is the sister of Harun and Musa. The girl that followed along the river when the basket was floating, her name was Miriam, okay? Miriam comes from the root letters in Hebrew that are the closest in Arabic to Mira. Mim, Ra, and Ya. Mara yumari mira'an wa mumaratan. It's used to argue, debate, to rebel. These are the meanings of the word. She's given that meaning. We believe that that name applies to her because she defied even the greatest king and went out there and, you know, broke their law and said, I know someone who can take care of him, and basically lied to the cops to get her family in, and she was defiant like that in the face of this military campaign. But they actually take a different meaning of Miriam, the original. We're talking now not of Mary, mother of Jesus, we're talking about Miriam, sister of Musa, right? So the Jews actually say that she was called that because she's a rebel, and because she was a rebellious sister, cursed with leprosy for questioning Moses' messengership and criticizing his marriage to an Ethiopian woman. It's not an Ethiopian woman. It's actually, he married in Madian, and he married an Arab woman, but for the Banu Israel to accept that she was from Madian and she was an Arab was far worse, so they went with Ethiopian. So Quran clarifies that issue too. But anyway, in Numbers, in the Bible, Numbers chapter 12, 1-16, you find her basically dissing Musa alayhi salam. And so they say she's rebellious, that's why her name was Miriam. So it's not a good name to them. So they think of it as in a bad sense. In any case, the interesting thing is that at the time of Isa alayhi salam, Hebrew was not the language. Hebrew was one of the languages, language of scripture, but the language dominant now among people was actually Aramaic. And Maryam is actually not Hebrew, it's actually Aramaic. It has an Aramaic origin. And it's made up of two parts, Mari and Am. Mari and Am. And Mari is actually God or Rabb in Aramaic. And is similar to Arabic, like Amma. If you've ever heard the phrase Amatullah, Amatullah is the feminine version of Abdullah. What does Abdullah mean? Slave of Allah. Amatullah is basically in Aramaic Maryam. I am elevating her to a servant of God, a Maryam. I am naming her a servant of God. What was the purpose of nadhar? That she's going to be constantly in the service of Allah. Literally, someone in the service of Allah and enslaved to Allah for His service and His service alone would be called a Maryam in Aramaic. And so that's what she names her child. The spelling of Mary's name in the four Greek Gospels, I'll skip this part, I'll just go to the end. Amazingly, the sentence when she says, I have named her Mary, would have been literally translated Mariama. Mariama, I have named her a servant of Allah, Lord, a female servant. That literally would have been the translation. Rabbi, you know, inni samaytuha Maryam, Master, it's a female servant. I'm okay with that. You know what? Then the rest of the ayah makes sense too. This girl is like no other boy, and it's okay. She can be a female servant of Allah. Even though everybody else is supposed to be a male servant of Allah, I name her and I dedicate her to be a female servant of Allah. It's her dedication, her nadhar, now reaffirmed just by the name that she gave, Maryam salamun alayha. Okay? So, inni sammaytuha Maryam. And then she adds finally, wa inni u'idhuha bika wa dhurriyataha min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. What amazing foresight. This can only have been inspired by Allah. I am dropping her and I am leaving her in your protection. I am leaving her to hold on to you. I am entrusting her to you to cling on to. U'idhuha from awd and uwad. Uwad, I've explained several times now, is when meat clings on to the bone. Uwad is when something sticks to something and doesn't let go, seeks protection. And so I'm putting her in your service, not just physically, she's in the house of Allah, clinging to the house of Allah, but she's clinging on to Allah Himself. U'idhuha bika. I'm putting her in, and so that she holds on to you for dear life, for protection. Bika. And she's talking to Allah now. Wa dhurriyataha. And her future offspring. Wait, a child with dhurriya? Supposed to be a boy with dhurriya. But this girl, special, even her children are going to be special. She's making dua that she's going to have children also. And her offsprings. She doesn't know who they're going to be. She doesn't know it's only going to have one child. But she's been dedicated. Dhurriyataha. There may be a, you know, I'm getting ahead of myself. There are two views about Isa alayhi salam, the dominant view and the minority view. The dominant view is that Isa alayhi salam is coming back. The minority view, some put doubt in the notion that Isa alayhi salam is coming back. I'm personally of the view, I share with you ahead of time, I'm personally of the view that he is coming back, alayhi salam. In light not only of the ahadith, my area of expertise is not hadith literature. And hadith criticism is a complicated subject. I go to scholars that I really rely on for hadith work and go and spend time with them to understand the authenticity and the interpretation of hadith texts, especially complicated hadith texts. My study is more focused on Quran. And it seems to me that in Quran studies, the return of Isa alayhi salam is mentioned in implicit ways. But implicit yet undeniable as far as I'm concerned. Like they seem to be strong enough hints. Allah Azza wa Jal inspired this woman to do several things very accurately. And one of the things He inspired her to do accurately is to say that I'm dedicating this child in your service, and not just this child, her future lineage, her offsprings, plural, dhurriya. Now we only know of one of her children, which is who? Isa alayhi salam. But if we accept the view that Isa alayhi salam is coming back, and in those narrations he actually has children. He gets married and has children, which is a continuation of her dhurriya. And you know, so there is a connection to the wording that she used in a very subtle way, possibly linking it to the future life of Isa alayhi salam after his return. So inni u'iduha wa dhurriyataha bika. It's also interesting that Isa alayhi salam is always in high conflict situations. You know, when he was here on earth, then he was surrounded by schemes, shaitani schemes that were trying to kill him. And when he comes back, things are much easier. Well, no. When he comes back, then he's again like directly facing the closest thing to shaitan in, you know, flesh form. So there's a lot of that parallel too when she says, I'm dedicating this child and her offspring into your refuge against a shaitan ar-rajim. I haven't ever done a tafsir discussion on a'udhu billahi min a shaitan ar-rajim. Even when I taught the Fatiha, I started with Alhamdulillah. I haven't done I've written an article on the Basmala. I didn't really talk a lot about A'udhu Billahi Minash Shaitanir Rajeem, but a couple of things, because it's come up now, that I'll mention in passing, that I think everybody should know. The word ash-shaytan has two possible origins, shatana or shata. Okay, so the root letters are either sheen, ta, and noon, or sheen, ya, and ta. Okay, those are the two possible meanings. Shatana, if you accept shatana for shaitan, then, or Satan, like that's where it comes from, actually means distance. The one taken far away. The one taken far away from the closeness. He was closest to Allah, and he was distanced from Allah. He was matrud, he was cast off, right? And that's what makes him distant. And his job is to make others distant from Allah. So that's what he is, and that's what he wants to do. He is ba'id, and he is muba'id. He's far away, and he wants to take people far away from Allah. Okay? أَنْتَ مِيلُوا مَيْلًا عَظِيمًا. Right? So, شَطَان وَيُرِيدُ الَّذِينَ اتَّبِعُونَ الشَّهَوَاتِ أَنْتَ مِيلُوا مَيْلًا عَظِيمًا. Those who follow desires, meaning follow the way of the devil, they want you to deviate far, far, far away. You know, ضَلَالًا بَعِيدًا, the Qur'an will use. Far away misguidance. The idea that the more you follow shaitan, the farther you get from Allah. That comes from shatana. Interestingly enough, it's a direct opposite of uwad. Because if you have the i'adha or the isti'adha of Allah, you're holding on as close as you can to Allah. You're clinging on to Allah. And you're clinging on to Allah, keeping Him as far away as possible. So He's not just away from Allah. By doing so, you're keeping Him far away from you. Okay, so that's the idea behind shaitana. The other meaning of shaitan is shayt, from shayt, which means jealousy and anger. Al-hasad wal-ghadab. So shaitan is extremely jealous, and he's extremely angry, and his anger comes from his jealousy. Right? So those are the two things he wants to instill into people, so that they can commit their evil crimes. In the case of Isa alayhi salam, it is actually jealousy. He knows more Torah than the rabbis do. And that's making them very angry. It's making them look bad. It's making their position weakened in society. And so it's jealousy and anger, the way of shaitan that created the animosity towards Isa alayhi salam. But anyways, he says, I dedicate her and I entrust her in clinging on to you and your protection. And along with her offspring. وَذُرِّيَّتَهَا. Notice the وَذُرِّيَّتَهَا is مُقَدَّم. It's not إِنِّي أُعِذُهَا وَذُرِّيَّتَهَا بِكَ. It's إِنِّي أُعِذُهَا بِكَ وَذُرِّيَّتَهَا. So this is while لِلْمَعِيَّةِ. It's along with her offspring. Not just her offspring too while I'm at it. So she adds that in. Just like, you know, Allah said, وَإِذْ يَرْفَعُ إِبْرَاهِيمُ الْقَوَاعِدَ مِنَ الْبَيْتِ وَإِسْمَعِيلُ. Like it's Ismail at the end. Along with Ismail. So here there's along with her future lineage and her future offspring from the shaitan. And then the next word is الرَّجِيمُ. And rajim is from, it's the fa'il form for the maf'ul meaning, marjum. Rajama, to pelt, to throw stones. Rajman bil ghaib in Surah Al-Kahf, right? So the idea of rajim, someone who's been shooed off, cast off, the one who is stoned as he comes near. Not only is he away, as far away, every time he tries to come near, he's shot at. You know the idea of forts and fortifications that have catapults back in the day. Nowadays you have secure buildings with snipers on the roof and stuff like that. So if enemies come near, they're shot away. You can't even approach the vicinity. There's a secure like perimeter. Not just the building, but there's a secure perimeter. And the idea of the perimeter being maintained is captured inside rajim. Like he can't even come near without being marjum. Every time we say, A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim, not only is he distanced because he's meant to be shatan, he's also pelted far away from us. So he stays away and he's hurt every time we say that. And al-rajim is a constant, you know. So he's already distanced from Allah, but when we say that, he's distanced from ourselves. So she dedicates him, she dedicates her child and her offspring from that protection. And it's, interestingly enough, you know, in Banu Israel, the punishment for adultery and having an illegitimate child was being stoned. Right? And it's a kind of a strange foreshadowing that I'm asking your protection from, you know, from this one who's supposed to stay away. And notice the theme of being distanced, the theme of being stoned. Right? Maryam had to go away. She had to go away from the land to have her child. And then when she came back, she was worthy of being stoned according to some. But even though they will treat me like this, so long as I'm holding on to your protection, then that's all that matters. Because the only distance that the only distance that must always be there, and the only curse I don't want ever, is to be close to Shaitan al-Rajim. So this is the protection that Allah Azza wa Jalla offered her. And there's another beautiful kind of foreshadowing inside of these words. Now, man, I was supposed to do more than that, but I'll at least start off the next ayah. فَتَقَبَّلَهَا رَبُّهَا. Her master accepted her. Beautiful things, you know, for this is why we study Arabic. تَقَبَّلَ يَتَقَبَّلُ وَا. Arabic students, تَقَبَّلَ يَتَقَبَّلُ وَا. تَقَبُّلًا. So if you say a maf'ul mutlaq, then you say تَقَبَّلَ تَقَبُّلًا. You have here, فَتَقَبَّلَ رَبُّهَا بِقَبُولٍ. There are two things that are, in the Arabic sense, unique. One is, instead of taqabbul, Allah used the word qabul. The expected grammar is taqabbalaha rabbuha taqabbulan hasanan. But the other interesting thing is there's a ba there. Fataqabbalaha rabbuha, not qabulan hasanan, but bi qabulan hasan. So there are two unique dimensions to the language of Allah accepting her prayer that she asked Allah, Maryam's mother asked. One, Allah accepted her. Now, the Arabic for accepting something is qabila yaqbalu, to accept. Taqabbala is the emphatic form, to completely, wholeheartedly accept. But there's another dimension to that word. I'll read actually what Imam Razi says, because he captures this beautifully. أَنَّ لَفْضَ التَّقَبُّلُ وَإِنْ أَفَادَ مَا ذَكَرْنَا إِلَّا أَنَّهُ يُفِيدْ نَوْعُ التَّكَلُّفْ عَلَى خِلَافِ الطَّبْعِ. The word taqabbul, if you add it, like if I say تَعَلَّمْتُهُ تَعَلُّمًا, as an example, actually means I learned it by working really hard. I totally learned it. You totally learned it is already in ta'allamtuhu, because it's already mubalagh of alimtuhu. When you added ta'alluman, you're saying I made a lot of effort in learning this. So there's a piece of takalluf, extra effort or burden that you took on to accomplish that, when you add the maf'ul mutlaq of this family, of tafa'ul family. Okay, تَحَلَّمَ تَحَلُّمَ تَصَبَّرَ تَصَبُّرًا. Oh man, he went out of his way to show patience. It was an extra effort for him to show that patience. That wouldn't have been appropriate for Allah. That Allah accepted completely is good, but Allah accepted completely and it was a pretty tough thing to do, that's not acceptable to say for Allah. So تَقَبُّلًا wouldn't even work. And you would have to say قَبُول. And so I'll just read it so you guys can hear what he's saying. وَأَمَّا الْقُبُولُ فَإِنَّهُ يُفِيدُ مَعْنَى الْقُبُولُ عَلَى وَفْقِ الطَّبْعِ. It's actually natural acceptance, not an effort-based acceptance when you say the word قَبُول. فَذَكَرَ التَّقَبُّلُ لِيُفِيدَ الْجِدْ وَالْمُبَالَغَةَ ثُمَّ ذَكَرَ الْقُبُولُ لِيُفِيدَ أَنَّ ذَلِكَ لَيْسَ عَلَى خِلَافِ الطَّبْعِ. He first mentioned taqabbul because it's serious. Allah totally accepted it, wholeheartedly accepted it, completely accepted her prayer. Not one part of her prayer was not taken, which is why it makes me go back to the word dhurriya and say Allah accepted dhurriya, not just Ibn. Right? Because Allah says He totally accepted everything she said. And then on top of that, He says, and then He used the word qabul because that's the more natural word to use. Allah accepted it. But then what is the ba doing there? Ibn Ashur mentions that the ba here is an additional kind of mubalagha to even the maf'ul mutlaq. And what it does is it creates a taswir, a surah, a picture. Allah accepted her, and in addition to accepting her prayer, Allah added another acceptance that she didn't even ask for. Bi qabul, Allah accepted her along with another beautiful acceptance. Another beautiful acceptance. So there's an acceptance that she didn't even imagine that is coming as part of her prayer. That Allah Azza wa Jal protect her and her offspring. And that maybe is a suggestion to, you know, she didn't know that she's going to have risala in her childhood, in her offspring, that a messengership will come in her offspring. She didn't know that she's going to have ruhullah, you know, ruh minhu, Isa alayhi salam, in her offspring. She didn't know that she's going to have the book of Allah, coming in her offspring. Those are beyond imagination. You can ask, give me a good child, give me a prophet, who's going to ask that? That's beyond our capacity to ask, you know. That's something Ibrahim alayhi salam asked, in all of my lineage, at least give them one messenger, right? And here she didn't even know. And so Allah says, in addition to answering her prayers, I gave her way more than that. Bi qabulin. And then, of course, the acceptance of Risala and revelation coming. And then the special role of Isa alayhi salam, not only of being a messenger of Allah and one of the ulul azmi min ar-rusul, one of the great messengers of the most phenomenal resolve, you know, of the five, he's one of the five. Then on top of that, to him also be the confirmer of the final messenger, وَمُبَشِّرًا بِرَسُولٍ يَأْتِي مِنْ بَعْدِ اسْمُهُ أَحْمَدٍ. Like, I'm going to tell you that his name is Ahmad. He's the one who actually, every messenger knew the final messenger is coming. He was given the name to. He was given Ahmad. He was told to be that. And then to not only be that, but to actually have the honor of coming back and confirming the Risala of Rasulullah. I mean, these are honors that are beyond, you know, one after the other after the other. And so in illustrating that, Allah adds qabulin hasanin, a beautiful acceptance. And in addition, an acceptance that's far more beautiful than imaginable. And that's really where you appreciate the use of the word hasan here, because risala is the most beautiful thing. Revelation is the most beautiful thing. So, you know, فَتَقَبَّلَهَا رَبُّهَا بِقَبُولٍ حَسَنٍ. And so I'm going to leave you with this next phrase, وَأَنْبَتَهَا نَبَاتًا حَسَنًا. Again, a play on masadir. أَنْبَتَهَا إِمْبَاتًا. أَنْبَتَ يُنْبِتُ إِمْبَاتًا. But it's أَنْبَتَهَا نَبَاتًا. Nabata is to grow a plant. When a plant grows, we call it nabata. When you grow a plant, when you're the farmer, then you're doing the act of أَنْبَتَ. يعني أَنْبَتَ النَّبَات. You grew it. When he says أَنْبَتَهَا, he compares Maryam Salamun Alayha to a growing of a, to the growing of a plant, the maturing of a plant. Now you have to really, when this kind of an imagery is suggested, you have to take pause and forget about Maryam for a moment. Just think about a plant. Just don't think about Maryam, just think about a plant. What does a plant need to grow properly? It needs something from underneath. It needs good soil. And a healthy plant cannot grow if the seed itself is corrupt. The seed has to be good. Right? And the seed will be an imagery of the parents. They're the seed. They're the provider of the seed. Then the soil has to be good, because if you have a good seed but you put it in bad soil, then it's not going to grow right. So the soil is a representation of the environment. That's the environment. But that's not enough. Even if you have good soil and you have good seed, you need water. Water is basically the nourishment for this plant. So the way that this plant is provided for has to be halal, has to be clean, has to be pure, has to be safe. And that needs to be there. And of course, she's already asked Allah Azza wa Jal for protection from all evil corrupt elements. So the environment is going to be safe, and the rizq that she's provided is going to be safe. Now, the farmer can provide water. Human beings can provide water. But there's something human beings can't provide that a plant still needs, which is what? The sun. The sun, the air. They can't provide that. That comes from Allah. So there has to be an external nourishment, light. And by the way, in the Quran, revelation is described as light. And angels are creatures of what? Of light. And she gets visited by angels. And so the parallel between a plant and her are very powerful. So Allah allowed her to sprout, Allah allowed her to grow as a plant. By the way, now let's take pause for a moment. Think about this. Let's compare this to the Israelites. A good number of the Israelites, do they come from good seed? Sure, they're descendants of prophets. Were they given a good environment? Sure, Allah gave them a free land. Were they given nourishment of Torah? Sure. Were there good people around them? Sure. And all of the ingredients were there, yet يَقْتُلُونَ النَّبِيِّينَ بِغَيْرِ حَقٍّ. They're killing prophets without any justification. All the things that I just mentioned that a plant needs to grow properly are there, and yet they don't grow. She has all those ingredients. But just because all of the ingredients are taken care of doesn't mean the plant will come out right. The plant has to show some initiative on its own. Sometimes the seed is perfect, the soil is perfect, the sun is perfect, and something just went wrong. This one just didn't grow any tomatoes. Something just happened. I don't know what happened. Something's missing in this plant. It just doesn't absorb the sun the way it should. It doesn't take in the water the way it should. It doesn't take advantage of the soil the way it should. You get what I'm saying? And so Allah says, not only was the best environment provided to her, أَنْبَتَهَا, He added نَبَاتًا. نَبَاتًا is actually a reference to her own initiative in taking in, absorbing the environment, taking the best of the environment. taking the best of the teachings that were being given to her. Because you could put a child in a madrasa, you could make a child memorize Quran, but if the child is going to take the way of shaitan, they could be in the most angelic environment and still get messed up. That will, the surrounding won't matter. We think if you just provide the right surrounding, everything's okay. No, the individual themselves have to show some initiative. They have to grow. They have to mature. They have to take the next step. And that's captured in Nabat. Had the word been ambataha imbatan hasanan, then imbat would have taken all responsibility off of her. Allah did his part in making sure that she sprouts and grows and matures. And by the way, that maturity of a plant, one more thing that I didn't mention, the maturity of a plant is important because one, it takes a long time. So her tarbiyah, her maturing, her upbringing, and her maturity is not something that just happened overnight. It's something that was developed over time, and which speaks for her character. All along she's been growing and maturing. So it's not like, you know, all of a sudden she became rebellious as she was accused. And then finally, if a plant does fully mature, it gives fruit. It gives fruit. And if it's a good plant, it will give good fruit. Well, what better fruit than Isa alayhi salam? Right? And what better spiritual fruit than the lessons of sabr and the lessons of tawakkul and the lessons of, you know, turning to Allah that she taught us, that we're still, the fruits of her life and her struggles we're still eating from. Those are fruits she left behind. So that's the parallel to this in brief language, ambataha nabatan, and then of course hasanan again. Qabul hasan, nabat hasan. There's a parallel made between the two, and this is where I end with that Allah Azza wa Jal is now mentioning or describing to us. Before, it was her dua of offspring that was accepted in the most hasan way, along with a hasan, a beautiful acceptance. And now there's a beautiful upbringing. Actually, Allah is saying, this is her, the answer to her prayer also. This is in addition to her prayer that Allah Azza wa Jal provided her this nabatan hasanan wa kaffalaha zakariya. Okay, I could keep going, but we got to pray. So, barakallahu li wa lakum fil Qur'an al-hakim wa nafa'ani wa iyyakum bil ayati wa dhikr al-hakim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh.